This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Nā mai, haere mai, kia ora tēnā koe, Free FM 89.0. Good afternoon to you. The weather says cold and showery, increasing towards midday. Well, that's about now. Outbreaks of rain from afternoon, possibly heavy and thundery with northerlies. We've got a severe thunderstorm watch from 2 p.m. this afternoon through till 9 p.m. tonight. Tomorrow, we're in for showers, heavier times, thunderstorms possible from the afternoon with the risk of hail. Oh, gusty nor'easterlies easing in the evening, and that is for tomorrow's outlook. Our sun rose this morning at 6:47 a.m. and will set again tonight at 5:48 p.m. and it will rise in the morning at 6:48 a.m. Anything else on the weather that I can tell you? Not at the moment. So it's going to be a very, very wet afternoon, possibly. So I'd take your umbrellas with you this afternoon when you go out. We are expecting a high today of around about 20 degrees. It's 19 degrees in the town at this present moment. What's on my mind? Yeah, what is on my mind at this present moment? Around... Well, column comment is coming. A day in history, April 19. Artists, stats, songs. New Zealand Hit Parade, chart.org.nz. We go back and remember history and song of February 1972. American and world politics with Gary Schofield this afternoon. When you read the New Zealand political polls at the moment, you know someone's in trouble when the poll goes below 29%. And that is facing the National Party at the present moment. They're below 30% at the moment. And there's been talks of coups. Chris Bishop is denying. Well, that's just politics for you and politicians. When they mention coups, you know something's going on in the back room. Remember, Christopher Luxon never had any experience as a politician. He wasn't a born a politician. He was a CEO, Air New Zealand. He came and he's the member for Botany. So he became Prime Minister after all the shenanigans when it comes to bringing in a new leader. And National's been through that. Remember when Rob Muldoon was rolled? Jim Bolger and all the rest of the backroom boys after the 1984 election. Yeah, it seems that New Zealand First are going up in the polls. Labour is ahead, and the popularity of Chris Hipkins is pretty good at the moment, even though he recently got into a bit of a mess earlier. That seems to have died down a bit, but will Winston Peters be there in later in the year, at 80 years old? Is he going to be like his namesake, Winston Churchill, and hang in there till, well, die in office? We don't exactly know. All the other parties, Green parties, are coming up, and the rest of the minor parties are going down. It's like the American polls at the moment. What they say, and I like the CNN man who throws his hands all over the place, Donald Trump, he says, is underwater with all his scandals. But look out, when we go to the polls later in the year, it's going to be interesting whether the polls are right or wrong. Never support a political poll, says Winston Peters. Anything could happen between now and I think the election in New Zealand is in October. Look out for more. April 19, 2026. It's 199, 56 days to go. 2025, Cyclone Tam causes traffic issues in Auckland.
In a flute, Cooler than Goodman, boy, he was beaut, and the thought that he thought in between each toot was Tamata Fokka Tangi Hanga Ko Wa 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 Tamatea Pokai Finnawe Kitana Tahu.
Today in 1882, scientist Charles Darwin dies. It was this day that, I forget the year, that Frankie Howard, the comedian, up Pompeii dies.
When from out of nowhere came the bullman, asking if I was free. He said, we've got matadors and picadors and toreadors and sliding doors, but we have lost the bull. The bullman said, Francesco, where's the bull? I said, search me, and he did. But he didn't find it, so he said, look, I want you and Charlie to get in a bull skin.
It was this day in 1824, Lord Byron dies. This day in 1966, in war, Australian troops leave Sydney bound for Vietnam.
You smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
It was this day in 1956, a royal wedding. Grace Kelly marries Prince Rainier of Monaco.
Suntan, wind blown, honeymoon.
Oh!
Lunars at last.
And it was this day in 2006 that Paul Simon is inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Pardon the voice. Late in the evening, this is Paul Simon at 12 to 1.
And I remember there was a radio coming from the room next door. My mother laughed the way some ladies do. When it's late in the evening and the music's seeping through, the next thing I remember, I'm walking down the street. I'm feeling all right. I'm with my boys and with my troops, yeah. And I heard the sound of acapella grooves, yeah. Singing late in the evening, and all the girls out on the stoops, yeah. Then I learned to play some lead guitar. I was underage in this funky bar, and I stepped outside to smoke myself a J. And when I come back to the room, everybody just seemed to move, and I turned. remember when you came into my life and said I'm gonna get that girl no matter what I do. Well, I guess I've been in love before. Once or twice I've been on the floor, but I never loved no one the way that I love you. Then it was late in the evening and all the music seeping through.
FM 89.0, independent community media, that is Paul Simon, late in the evening. Yes, in 2006 he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It was Art Garfunkel inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? We just don't know, excuse me. Just back to Frankie Howard, he died this day in 1992. I forgot to put it down. The year. Anyway, we got there. Frankie Howard, remember him from Up Pompeii. Well, the New Zealand Hit Parade, chartorg.nz, history and song. February 7, 1972, Keith Holyoake retires as Prime Minister in office since October 26, 1960. He previously held office between September 20 and December 12, 1957. 69 years ago, 12 years as Prime Minister, the third longest behind Richard Seddon and William Massey. From 1972, the late Alec Wishart and the Society Jazzmen.
Granddad was a man who loved to gamble, horses, greyhounds and the football pools. He loved the football game and everyone who came would soon forget the stars they met, but they remembered Granddad's name. And as the centre forward was approaching, the opposition's goal heads would turn. No interest in the game, the crowd had heard his name. Sitting there on that old chair, the cup will never be the same. When Granddad played his piano on the terrace, 100,000 hands began to clap. The referee stood still, the goalkeeper was ill. When Granddad played the piano, here he goes now. With a gun, and so he took his idea to the brass at Whitehall. Churchill, Eisenhower, and De Gaulle. Just put me in a place and give me finger space. They'll run a mile in with a smile. His fingers they began to race. When Granddad played his piano to the Germans, Rommel turned his tanks towards Berlin. For every note he played, the German Empire prayed. When Granddad played the piano, go to it, Grandfather. It was a sad day for the folks who knew him when Granddad stood outside the pearly gates. St. Peter took his hand
into the promised land. His one regret, if he could get a piano, they could start a band. Now every angel granddad asked to join him. We're playing halves of every shape and size. But then to his delight, it was a pretty sight. Granddad's old piano, prove it, granddad.
Oh, yeah, Granddad's Piano, Alec Wishart and the Society Jazzmen. That was an offshoot of Hawksnort Rupert, of course, and Dave and the Dynamos. It's 4 minutes to one and Bulldogs All-Star Good Time Band. Hey, does anybody remember from our older audience on how the one and only Sir Keith Holyoake spoke? Let's go back to 1963.
Good evening. As you know, the major political parties in this election each have 10 minutes television time to use as they wish. Rather than present a pictorial program with carefully prepared script and miscellaneous film clips, the National Party has invited Dr. John Reed, associate professor at Auckland University, to interview the Prime Minister. Dr. Reed, who is a well-known television interviewer, is not connected with any political party, and is free to ask any questions he feels will interest New Zealanders at this late stage of the election campaign.
Thank you, Alan. Well, Mr. Holyoake, first of all, a general question, if you don't mind. Several voters seem to think that this election campaign has been pretty tame, that there's no central issue of any real importance. What do you think about this?
Well, Dr. Reed, this is my 11th general election, and people have said much the same thing about most of them. I assure you, if you had attended any of my meetings up to date, you wouldn't think the election campaign was tame. People are taking a really live interest.
What is the real issue, then?
Well, undoubtedly, a central issue is a matter of taxation. I find that people still have a very vivid memory of Labour's budget of 1958. They are appreciative of the taxation.
Yes, the one and only Sir Keith Holyoake, better known as Kiwi Keith. And he was in office from 1960 right up to 1972. He became Governor-General in 1977, very controversial at the time. He's appointed by Sir Robert Muldoon. Stephen King is next. It's 2-1. The late Tim Harden.
Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air. Tell the people it and everywhere. We the people here don't want war. Hey there, Mr. Black Man, can you hear me? I don't want your diamonds or your game. I just want to be someone known to you as me. And I will bet my life you want the same. Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you never sung before. Let it fill the air. Tell people everywhere. We the people here don't want war. 700 million, are you listening? Most of what you read, most of what you read is made of lies. Speaking one to one, ain't it everybody's son?
It's coming up 1 o'clock at 3 FM 89.0. Stephen King will be with a couple of seconds, but just from the headlines, global cocaine production and use have reached unprecedented levels as of 2026, driven by record high coca cultivation and expanding trafficking networks. Global illicit cocaine production surged to over 3,700 tonnes by late 2025, a roughly 34% increase from the previous year. This is primarily due to record high cultivation of coca bushes in Colombia, where yields increased by nearly 50%. Opinion, Stephen?
Well, it's just out of control, isn't it? And there's a variety of drugs that are coming to the market. You can talk about cocaine growing, what have you. Synthetic methamphetamine is man-made. The whole situation is quite... it's concerning, but there's very little that can be done. That just sounds terrible. The reality is that we're small islands down here in the South Pacific. We can't keep it out. We pay high margins for whatever drugs comparatively to other places in the world. So there's a good markup here, even though that's the state of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds pretty serious, but of course you have these gangs who travel the world. I've just read yesterday, and I did it for the other program I do, Scotty's Place, that a Scottish drug lord has just been interned in the Netherlands. He's about to stand trial for... He's a gang member and gang leader, but...
Look, there's people in middle society that have been roped in. The money's that big. As per the newspaper article that I've pointed to yesterday in the Waikato Times, two pages, and that is the truth of it, that drugs, whether it be MDMA, cocaine... Stimulant drugs, I'd like to talk a bit more about the impact of stimulant drugs. Methamphetamine and cocaine are stimulant drugs. People become, when they get high on stimulant drugs, they become elevated and think that they can say and do whatever they kind of like, which is different from opiate-type drugs like heroin and morphine and what have you. So you've got your stimulant highs and you've got your depressant drugs. And actually, people are mixing them and going for both effects, where traditionally and historically, people would be either uptown or downtown.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and we know from watching documentaries how people do sniff cocaine. It's kind of cut up. Give us the...
It's like sniffing anything, and people think that it'll be very obvious that they're high on cocaine. Actually, it's quite a discreet kind of high. And it's, you know, I'm just trying to couch my words carefully for your listeners, because
yes.
there's no point in me giving out the true wholehearted message. I think I will. I can't help myself. This problem is now to a stage where the old man in me, not a young fella, calling for, if we weren't had so many other things going on in our society in the Middle East and all the rest of it, it would be to mobilise the army, Air Force and military service and all police to stop the growth in the drug cartels, both to stop them getting in, which is impossible, I'm told, by customs and police, but responding internally. The drug dealers are going about their business, and who is a drug dealer? Yes, we know, and I support the national-led government's policy with regards to justice with gang guys. But where does a gang guy end and the consumer begin? That's what people don't get to appreciate, because we don't dark. We don't talk about it, and it's only 5 minutes away from any mobile phone you care to use.
But who's talking in Mark Mitchell's ears about this? You don't see You read in the paper sometimes that a big drug bust has been made, but someone has to talk to Mark Mitchell.
Oh, look, I have spoken to Mark Mitchell before today. He is fully aware of the problem. I think everybody, even your listeners, are aware of what's going on here. It's in the police water reports. You can't argue with the police water reports. They're not manufactured. They're the true reality of it. But what can Mark Mitchell or anybody else do about the problem?
You've got to catch these gangs, these... Is it the gangs like Black Power, or are they doing cocaine? Are they making it? Or
gang guys are gang guys, whatever they are. It's a group of people that wear a badge. Well, I can think wear a shirt that says such and such group. I don't want to name anything. So you can go the hard end, and those gang guys who are declared gang guys and their associates, you lock them up and imprison them for the process of proving court of law, and that's what you do. But what you have to remember is that there's a couple of things. One is, as soon as one's gone, there's another one takes its place. That's the seriousness of the problem. And then there's the guys, the middlemen, which I used to be one of back in the 80s myself, where I would buy the drug and I would sell it on cannabis. I was a hippie from Coromandel. I'd buy the cannabis and I would cut it, in other words, make it smaller sizes for a certain margin, and then I would sell it on to support my own habit. Yep. So what does that make me? Does that make me a gang guy?
No, of course not. But when I see these gang tongies, I think the police are really too friendly when they just say wave goodbye and on your way. They should stop these.
Yes, but they've got to work to the letter of the law, police. The police can't just go off, and they take some chances these days. I mean, you know, another thing today about kids being held in custody by the police and what have you. They have to follow the law. In fact, the likes of the institution has to behave better than the recipient. Because I tell you what, if you step out of line, the court will throw it out.
And, of course, at the ports, you get these corrupt...
Yes, you do. They're in the paper here. Yep. There's lots of them. There's quite a few of them being arrested. There's people from all walks of life.
And the airports.
Yeah, and the airports. And the argument goes on. While there's supply and demand, while there's demand, so will come the supply.
These guys at the airports.
This is about money, and some people will do anything to get it.
And, of course, they're captured, they're jailed, and... What do you do
with them? Then they become rough sleepers and the thing. This conversation could go on for a long time.
Yeah.
Let me say, I cannot help but tell you that I support the current government's, MMP government's, way forward. They have to do this.
Mm-hmm. And what about the other drugs like cannabis and...
Well, for some people, cannabis is just a mild drug, gives you a bit of a high, and that's great. Yep. But for people who have a predisposition to mental illness, it's a nightmare.
Yep.
Our mental health hospitals, and I note Matt Ducey on page 3, who fails to talk about drugs. His first two pages are about drugs. Now, this is a separate article, and he doesn't even mention it.
I just watch him in Parliament. He hardly ever speaks. He just sits there behind his Prime Minister and just he's got a blank look on his
face.
Well,
it's not the top job. It's not the cabinet post that everybody wants. But anyway... Near mind. We can't chance that. We can do the best we work. What I can tell you is that when people become sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they will end up losing their situation, their house, their money, their job, all those things will go. It might stand out with a little bit of nice little white powder on a Friday night, but eventually, within 4 to 7 years, my academic mates tell me, they will lose everything. And along that way, some of them become, generally when they get into their 30s, sick and tired of that lifestyle that comes with it, the dishonesty and the having to, you know, tell porkies to get more money from family so they can maintain their habit and stuff.
Yep.
They make a decision to have a look-see is there a life after alcohol and drugs? Because that's the thing about taking drugs. They provide a level of escape from one's mental state of being and the problems of their lives. But the trouble is when they come down, the same old problems, they have to cope because the same problems continue to exist. So it's escape, cope. And that's not the answer. But then they consider looking to see if there is a life. They go looking for others that have been on the journey, like myself, of lived experience. And there's many of us now that there is a life without alcohol and drugs, and it's far more rewarding than any high I ever had.
I don't miss alcohol drinking it, so but I just see that people swig back bottles and cans of beer to...
Now, alcohol's making a bit of a comeback.
Yeah.
It's an in excess alcohol is a nasty drug.
Yeah.
No good for the kidneys and liver and diabetes.
I know that what alcohol did to my liver, and it's still I'm going to get a medical check in the next couple of weeks just to check on how it is.
Yeah, people choose to drink a little bit of alcohol. It's part of our historical culture. It's just amazing how far man's come or not come.
Well,
should I say
we're both old enough to remember the 6 o'clock swill when wartime 1916 New Zealand had pubs close at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that went on right into this.
It couldn't have. A woman weren't allowed in the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that probably stopped it a bit, but.
Yeah, I have vague memories of that. And then it went to 10 o'clock, and I could understand that. Now it's just too readily available. My mate Professor Selman from Otago, lead psychiatrist, get it out of the supermarket. It would have been best to stay with wine shops and stuff.
And of course, when I lived in Auckland in the 90s, they had a 24-hour bar. So when you went to work on Queen Street in the morning, there was a bar open at 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't think they happen these days, but.
That's the way we've gone. I'm concerned about the effects on people, because it's what it's arguing is not just the lower middle class people that are using drugs and alcohol now. This is across our entire society, from our wealthy to our poor.
I still hear people say, people, they think they in the know, that cannabis should be decriminalised. Your thoughts?
You put me on the spot.
Oh, sorry about that.
I believe that it's a choice that people make.
Yes.
So part of me says, yes, people need to be able to choose what they do and don't do.
Mm.
That making something illegal doesn't solve the problem. I think from where we've got to, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, Stephen, thank you for coming in, because right now I'm going to play the original version of I Get a Kick Out of You, which contains the song Cocaine.
Yeah.
This is the late Cole Porter himself.
My story is much too sad to be told, but practically everything.
I think this is Ethel Merman, actually.
The only exception I know is the case when I'm out on a quiet spree, fighting vainly the old suddenly turn and see your fabulous face. I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true that I get a kick out of you? Come get a kick from cocaine. I'm sure that if I took even one sniff, that would bore me terrifically too. Yet I get a kick out of you. I get a kick every time I see you're standing there before me. I get a kick, though it's clear to me you obviously don't adore. I get no kick in a plane, flying too high with some guy in the sky is my idea of nothing to do. Yet I get a kick out of you.
The late great Ethel Merman, Cole Porter's I Get a Kick Out of You, with the original lyric of Cocaine in it. It's 16 past one. Good afternoon, Mel.
Good afternoon. And flotillas of oil tankers gather in the Strait of Hormuz, keen to weigh anchor and sail across oceans to feed an oil-thirsty world economy that depends on it. In the Middle East, peace prospects in the lands of Lebanon and Israel promise that for 10 days, counting them from last Friday, they'll negotiate their terms, by which time United States President Donald Trump hopes to come up with another deal to end the recent intense fighting and heavy casualties. Any chances of that? We ask our political observer, Gary Schofield.
Hi, Mel and Bruce. Good to hear your voices, and you might recall this time last week we were on the show and discussing the possibilities of that peace agreement and the talking, and I thought, separate to a lot of other commentators, that it was likely that there would be some kind of progress towards peace in that area, and having people together from 1979 that hadn't talked, and having the whole prospect that both sides would benefit greatly from a ceasefire, it did turn out that it led in some part to the Lebanon-Israeli ceasefire, which was one of the contingencies for ending the war in Iran from Iran's perspective. So that, I would say, would be a progress. So in that regard, and I also suspect that President Trump went to his friend Bibi and said, "Stop it, Bibi," or something to that. And because I think that it would be a U.S. initiative involved in that. Israel has not yet completed its military goals. As a matter of fact, some of Hezbollah has managed to retake some of the territory that it lost. So that, regardless, that is a positive towards the overall possibilities of a peace plan. But now you've got a situation where each side has to come away with something to declare a success. We've now got a opening of the strait, if you, with response to the ceasefire in Lebanon, but then you've got a blockade from the United States, which is a closing of it, and then you've got a formal closing of it recently from Iran. So what has been going on here? And you'll also see that Trump has been making overtures to China, saying how much they'll appreciate his opening the strait. He's got a meeting there next month, early next month. And I actually feel that we've opened the door to another conflict, a proxy war with China. Because the reality is that the ships that have been getting through over the past weeks have been cargo for China. So by blockading it, it's really blockading what already is in existence. So I don't think that China can owe Trump any favors for that. And furthermore, as we've seen with our own local news, we have our own military challenged and a formal complaint against them. with the issue of using surveillance ships that they say encroach into the airspace of China, and we reply and say, well, in fact, it's just part of the looking at sanctions and how they're being mobilized through and against North Korea. So we've got all these factors. Coupled with that, we also have our own Nicola Willis going to Washington, speaking to the administration. It's a wonderful opportunity to do that. And I hope we've done more than complain, because every country is complaining about the terrible situation that we're in. It might be good to have mentioned Asia and the Pacific and the importance of trade and the importance of U.S. presence, which a lot of it now has gone to the Middle East. So things like that were other opportunities. But to answer the question in a short answer, yes, I do believe there are possibilities for an end to this conflict, and I'm looking forward to that day.
It would help if Pete Hegseth didn't quote Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction at his late last speech, I heard. He quoted out of the Bible. It was from Pulp Fiction.
Yes. Yes, I think we have had discussions about Pete Hegseth's approach to delivering what should be sobering and metered news about conflict, especially when life and death is concerned. And yes, I would second that that perhaps a more metered approach would be better for the interests of the United States. However, when you look at some of the wild things that have happened, and that's when we quote the 25th Amendment, so don't forget it wasn't very long ago that Trump himself got up there using curse words, something you never do in international affairs, or certainly not publicly, and saying that the civilization of Iran was going to end tonight and the Stone Age and all the rest of that. That was, some would say, a play to the strategy of the madman approach, in that convince your opponent that you are crazy and you will do anything, such as destroy the civilization. And in that particular case, there was discussions after it, that the discussions did begin. So it's hard to say which part is theater, which part has a plan, and which part is over the top.
It's interesting, Gary, because I love fact-checking Mr. Trump. I don't know how many fact-checks are made of him a day. But he said in another speech that his father was born in Germany. Well, I went to Wikipedia. He was born in the Bronx in New York City. So that's another fact check on Donald J. Trump.
I did think that the family line was Scottish, but that might be on his mother's
side. Yeah, that's his mother's side, the Isle of Lewis.
Closely at the genealogy. But what they say about all great people in history, that most of it is myth. And of course, it's very important to create your own myth, because if you don't, somebody will create it for you. Yeah. So there we go. Politics is its own game, and it's been an extraordinary experience with my 30 years in Washington in the middle of that. So, yes, I concur.
Yeah, let's leave the Republicans alone for a few minutes and go to the Democrats, because one of their rising stars has quit immediately from Washington because he's facing serious charges.
Oh, yes. And as a matter of fact, I alluded to that.
Yeah.
When we were talking before about Eric Swalwell, and we were talking about Pam Bondi, and there was talk that she had informed him that he was going to be investigated for something that happened a long time ago, and it was a spy from China that he'd become involved with and that he'd been compromised. And the same gentleman looks like they got him anyway, doesn't it? Because he had to resign when people made accusations against him for other matters. So, yes, that's what you're... And he's quite a powerful player, gubernatorial candidate, and a major player in the Democratic Party. I do agree. Can we go back for one second?
Yes, yep.
Just to the issue of us here and how bad things are in terms of the massive price increases in petrol and diesel, of course. You know, because it just, I remember every time I have been here, people have always, in the news or in commentary, and accountants and people who explain economics and professors, they all tell us, almost patting us on the head, that it's all about supply and demand. So, turns out from the government that supply is fine. Supply is fine of petrol, and demand is about the same, if not less. Why are we getting these enormous prices? There must be another factor involved in the marketplace. Why don't we have a good investigative journalist explain this massive elephant in the room that's missing?
I'll get our intern to look up the current prices. He's out the back listening to us at the moment. So, Dwayne, make sure you've got all, when you come to talk to us, make sure you've got all the latest petrol prices. He's probably cursing me out the back right now. So, but please do that. But there's not, there's plenty.
Well, it just seems to me that you've got the petrol or whatever is on the ships that takes up to 6 weeks to arrive here. Well, surely they're already bought and paid for with our money beforehand. You know, they're not being sold on the free market. They're not going to suddenly veer off to South Korea because they've got a better offer there. It would seem that the prices that we should be getting should be the ones before the conflict, because that conflict hasn't quite reached us yet in terms of our supply.
Well,
it just seems to me. So I would like your genius in the background to come forward and, yes, indeed, explain to us the huge missing factor, as long as it isn't something like speculation or, price gouging or anything.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yes, I look forward to that conversation. Yeah. I think the whole world would like to have a listen.
And Mel.
There have been some changes at the top of the CIA. Is it anything is to be concerning the world?
Extremely, extremely in the small print, I noticed that John Brennan, who is previously the director of the CIA, is being investigated by the judicial system, or I don't know if it's part of the Trump team, but people have been on that case about the conspiracy to involve and to bring down Trump. So if you go back, you remember that you have the Russiagate, the Steele dossier. You also have Jack Smith. I remember Bruce very much bringing up Jack Smith and the material that he had on Trump and all the rest of that was all there. Well, now there's a big case, and I think it's being under the jurisdiction of Judge Cannon, and you might remember that Judge Cannon was quite favorable in her rulings to Trump. But here's the implication of this. The CIA, should this be true, that the CIA was involved in trying to prevent Trump from becoming president or entangling him in all this web of conspiratorial things that turned out not to be true, should that be the case, then Trump is going after the CIA to some degree. This is fairly explosive stuff.
I thought the CIA was not meant to work within America's territory, but
there you go.
Yeah,
this is what, and I'm admittedly, we're only looking at some headlines. We don't have a lot of the details involved, but yes, the implication of this would be, should that be true or proven to be, that there should there be a conspiracy of that nature, that would be very significant in how the elections are shaped or whether there was interference. And don't forget, there was also the 50 or so intelligence operatives, including Brennan, who said that it was not Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation, or that they thought it was, or whatever. But that was, again, part of what Trump is now trying to go back and hold people to account, including some of the most powerful people in history, like with the CIA.
Yeah. Finally,
while he's busy with the rest of the world at the same time, by the way.
And finally, in world news this week, J.D. Vance goes to visit the Hungarian leader, and a week later, and like the Pope died soon after visiting, being visited by J.D. Vance. He's a curse. You can see the
Is that causality or correlation?
I don't know.
That would be the scientific question to that, but well put, Bruce.
But the Hungarian leader is lost in the election, big time.
He did, and that's Orban, Viktor Orban, and that is quite significant when it comes to the balance of power, especially in the war in Ukraine, because Orban was one of those people that said, and I think he might have been the only country that was holding back a lot of donations and a lot of money that would have gone to Ukraine, and now it's been freed up. So that would, I would say, exacerbate that war, escalate it. So we have to be careful there too, by the way. But yes, that is a big, significant public defeat for Vance. And also, as we pointed out at the time, it would be quite extraordinary if the president or vice president came out here and said, you know, vote for Winston Peters or vote for Luxon. You know, that would be... Not the sort that would be a furor, wouldn't it?
Now, hey, we're running out of time. Next week, we will talk about what the Pope is saying, because he's become very political lately. Yes. So we'll talk about that next week.
Great topic.
All the best to
Great
Stuart.
Great topic.
Also.
Look forward to that.
It's a pleasure. Have a good week.
Yep.
It's
you
a pleasure.
Too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's continue with our theme on what Stephen was saying. This, the original version of Have a Drink on Me was concerned with drugs. They cleaned it up, and this is the version by the late Lonnie Donegan.
In 1880, down a dusty road, along came a miner with a big fat load. He was caking dirt from his head to his foot, his hair so black that it looked like soot. Well, he reined in his mule and he hitched him to the rail and he said, old feller, it's the end of the trail. Well, he ambled down to the old saloon. He said, I know it's early and it ain't quite noon. But hey, hey, everybody drink on me. Everybody have a drink, have a drink, have a drink on me. Everybody have a drink on me. Hey, hey, everybody drink on me. Said my uncle died and left an oil well to me. Hey, hey, everybody drink on me. I've been digging all my life and I nearly dug to hell, but my uncle dug potatoes and he struck an oil well. Oh, hey, hey, everybody drink on me. Let me hear you, man. Have a drink, have a drink, have a drink on me. Everybody have a drink on me. Hey, hey, everybody drink on me. Have a drink, have a drink, have a drink on me. Everybody drink on me. Brother Leslie, help. A fortune writing Adam Faith songs. Hey, hey, everybody drink on me. One more time. Have a drink, have a drink, have a drink on me. Everybody have a drink on me.
As I made my way, I heard the music start to play. Happy sound, people all around, I knew that I was here to stay. Suddenly, by the tree, witness me. She
worked all week in a discotheque. She looked at me, but she didn't speak. The beat was good, and I knew I should have bought an extra pair of feet. What a day, so I say, yep, hooray.
Come on, my lover, give us a kiss.
Whoa, pretty girl, can I take you home on a bright and sunny morning?
Yes, the fabulous late Alec Wishart, out of England, and Pretty Girl with Hoxnell Rupert's original Flagon Band. Notice the spoons and the kazoo in the background there.
Can I take you home on a bright and sunny morning? We danced all night in the
fabulous music from 1970, all those years ago. Good afternoon, boys. Here's our intern.
Good afternoon.
Latest petrol prices and shipping news.
Dwayne Porter decided long ago to improve his education. Dwayne, you keep track of sports events. You should have been a reporter.
Well, Mel, I don't think so. Well, what do you make me to be a reporter for?
You have more knowledge than most of us about the movement of the fuel prices, plus the panel beaters work when they buy up cars that are beyond repair. Sometimes there are people in the market who are going to scrap them for the metal they contain.
Yep.
You follow the shipping around our coasts with interest, and you have such interests of a diverse kind.
Should be a politician.
Well, I can tell you, Mel, when I first started this, about the shipping and that, I was at the age of 15 when I was either 13 or 14 I started. And I sat down at the beach, and here I am thinking, what is going on out there? What's all these boats are doing out there? So I thought to myself, right, I'll go and get a newspaper. So I went and got a newspaper, and I sat down at the beach with the newspaper. I made a pair of binoculars out of toilet rolls. And I actually looked through, and I could see the boat names, you know, some thing. So I looked at my newspaper, and I thought, oh, okay, that boat's going to do it there very soon. So I thought to myself, yeah, okay, I'm going to do it. And when I did it, I actually did the whole thing. Was that I decided to figure out now what I'm going to do. So when I figured out what I was going to do, I sat down and worked it all out. what boats were coming in.
Did you find that your learning was better on your own research rather than being exposed in a formal classroom setting at school?
Yes, yes. Like, I used to be, like, I had to sit, like, I used to be like a, what do you call it, a little stirrer. And I'd have to sit, I had to sit outside, you know, rain, hail or snow, doing my schoolwork.
Hey, in many countries, you've got to go outside the classroom and put a book on your head. Did you ever do that?
Well, no, I didn't put a book on my head. I just carried on doing my schoolwork. And when the rain stopped, I brought my schoolwork inside and went out there and played.
So when you address the unfolding question of where's our fuel, the fuel that can only reach New Zealand by tanker, it's already refined largely. Which ships? Most people don't care as long as they come. But you look at their names and where they're coming from, where they're bound and what they might be carrying. Could you give us just a couple of examples?
Well, I can say that the list you got in front of me, that some of them, like we've got four petrol boats arriving in very soon.
There's one called Ningbo.
Yep, she's due in.
In a couple of days, whereabouts? Yep.
She came from Wellington. Oh, no, sorry, she came from sea and she was going straight to Wellington with a load.
It'll be eagerly awaited there. And another one would be the Forever Glory.
Yep. Yep, she's doing next week, Mel. She's coming in from towards Korea and she'll be doing in to Port Tauranga and then she'll be going straight out to either Littleton or to Marsden Point.
Carrying?
Petrol.
Petrol.
Yep.
So that's one of the ones we rely on arriving. You see their dates change. Sometimes a ship is diverted out in the ocean, receives new instructions from the owners. What about TP Endurance?
Yeah, she's joining next week. She's sitting out there at the moment. At the moment, out there's about 40 boats sitting
40?
In, sitting in there waiting to come in.
At the port of Tauranga?
Yep.
Well, Mr. Schofield sitting there with his cup of tea or coffee, waiting to hear where's the cheapest petrol in town.
Well, the cheapest petrol in town, guys, is Pack and Save Clarence Street. They've dropped their price down.
Yep.
And also that BP Tristram Street have done the same.
Good on you. Thank you for your report, our intern.
But I can tell you, I've got some sports results that will keep you happy over the weekend. How Tapu beat Hamilton Old Boys by 40 points to 0.
Good old How Tapu.
Te Aumuru beat Matamata by 26 points to 0. And Morrinsville beat Hamilton Marist by 24 to 22. So, But as I say, with my open poly check, Mel, is that it's one of the hardest ones I've ever done. When I first started doing open polytech, I thought to myself, well, rather if I should chuck it out or sit there and do it. So my teacher encouraged me, no, don't chuck it out. No, we will help you get through all this. And then I figured out, well, okay, and like it was just like pushing and pushing and pushing, pushing. Like just pushing it, you know, get all your studies and everything done. And then the second and last day, I finally, on the deadline, I finally had my last assessment handed in and marked the same time. And then I get an email and a phone call to say that I passed that one. And then they put me onto the online computering. So the online computering, Mel, is one of the trickiest ones. I passed the first one. I'm onto the second one now. And once I get this one finished, I get the third one finished. And then hopefully that will be a pass. And then I've still got another three more to do on top of that. And then after I finish doing the online computering, I'll probably end up doing a level four after that. So it's one of those things that, Mel, I'm just, you know, I'm not pushing it. I'm just going to do it and, you know.
You're confident you can.
Well, you know, I've got plenty of support and plenty of backup.
Yep.
And all that, you know, and even like when Open Polytech rings you and have a welfare check, they just check on you to see, you know, if you're done very well. Yep. And like, as I say, is that I have had a 3-week break and I'm back in, you know, back into it next week.
Hey, thank you, sir, for your report. Well, next weekend is Anzac weekend, of course, and Saturday there'll be dawn services and other services around New Zealand and around the world. So next week I'm going to play you a few World War II, World War I songs, so look out for them. So I'll give you a taste from a New Zealand artist called Les Cleveland.
Oh, give me a to my Africa star and a clasp to wear on my breast. And I'll stay here in place with a smile on my face, content on my laurels to rest. Star, beautiful star, I wonder just how good you are. But if you get a shout, I'll tell you about the bravery that won me my star.
That was recorded on Kiwi Records. That's Les Cleveland and the D-Day Dodgers. Les Cleveland was a serviceman in World War II, and he released an album on Kiwi Records called The Songs We Sung. More next week. It's Anzac weekend next weekend. It's 14 minutes to 2 o'clock. Trevor's Talk. Hello, sir.
Oh, hello. I believe you were expecting a call to come through about a cat.
Yes, talk about the cat. No, we haven't heard about the cat yet.
Oh, okay. Maybe Mel could clarify that when he gets back. But I'll talk about another topic. People, shopkeepers, they get ram raided and burgled very violently, if I may add.
Yes.
It is against the law for the shopkeeper to resist them.
Should they? I know some of the ethnic shopkeepers want to take baseball bats from behind the shelves, but that puts them in a worse place with the police.
Yeah, it's a very tricky situation because my heart goes out to the shopkeeper losing all their hard-earned stock. But I think it depends on a resistance to a burglary, maybe. I know somebody that got burgled in a chemist shop and the chemist slapped them in the face.
Yes.
And got reprimanded by the police. I mean, trouble is with that law, the crooks get to know it and everything's on a silver plate, so to speak, when they break into the shop. And with little resistance knowing that they can't do that.
I've seen some of the videos of these people coming into the shops. Both here in Hamilton, we had the ram raids of stores with the alcohol, and then they've got to spend money putting bollards in. But it's mainly young people. Remember the video that we saw about a couple of years ago of a car being driven through Centre Place? And
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and Sharpwell Square.
Yeah.
I don't blame the kids, I blame the parents. There are parents out there who couldn't give... I was going to say a rude word, who couldn't give a monkey's uncle to what where their children are. And I see children roaming around town with no parents, or with their parents. Their parents start yelling and screaming at the kids, and it doesn't sound too good.
Parents have probably got addiction problems as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you for your point of view this afternoon, Trevor. Been watching television, been watching everything, and you're back to your favourite program. We will remain nameless because someone will protest. So.
Coronation Street.
Hey, Trevor, we'll catch up with you next week. And it was this day in 1956 that a certain American actress called Grace Kelly married Prince Rainier of Monaco. And one of her last movies was, of course... back to the penmanship of the late Cole Porter. And of course, this is True Love. This is Bing Crosby and the late Princess Grace of Monaco, Grace Kelly.
Suntan, wind blown, honeymooners at last alone, feeling far above par. Oh, how lucky we are. While I give to you and you give to me, true love, true love. So on, it'll always be true love, true love. For you and I have a guide.
Kelly, Princess Grace of Monaco from High Society, True Love. Trevor, you got something else to say?
Oh, sorry. Nothing
about the cat?
That's what we were juggling, actually, but not getting through on the phone.
Oh, well, we're running out of time. Maybe we'll know next week. Looking at what Stephen King said earlier, increasingly, meth is arriving in New Zealand in the form of chemical precursors, where it will be combined with other substance to form meth in its recognisable form. And I know over the years there has been these precursors in use for people out of Huntly Narawatia to cook on the stove all this meth, etc., etc. They just want to pay money. You're very worried, like Stephen is, about the rise of drug taking in New Zealand.
It's reaching epidemic proportions.
Like cocaine.
Ah, dear.
We're getting old, Trevor.
Yeah, I can't understand what people see in that sort of thing.
Anyway, mentioned earlier that this weekend coming, Saturday, is Anzac Day. I don't know what your plans are, but take the kids down to Piranha Park and look back at the history. They might find notice of their grandfathers, great-grandfathers, uncles, aunt, and everybody else. Aunties, yes, women fought in World War One, and even 14-year-old boys even went to Gallipoli, both from New Zealand and Australia. One of the hymns sung at Anzac Day. Here's a version from Paisley Cathedral in Paisley, Scotland, Renfrewshire. The late Kenneth McKellar.
When are the temples? joys grow dim, its glories pass away. Change and decay in all around I see. Oh, thou who changest not,
Kenneth McKellar from his album, Kenneth McKellar's Book of Hymns, released around 1968, live from Paisley Abbey, and Abide With Me. We'll join you on next Sunday as Mel just informed me he's going to the Anzac Day service, the dawn service. We'll hear from more about that next week and a lot of more music from World War One and Two next week. Have a great afternoon. Keep cool, because we're expecting thunderstorms this afternoon. Bye-bye for now.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.